Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's like home, but it's so dark and empty.
What do you mean? 11.
Friends don't lie.
Stop it! You're freaking her out!
He's freaking me out!
The upside down.
Do you understand what he's talking about?
No.
I found the chocolate pudding!
Oh God, please tell me it's not the kid.
I need you to hide!
Warnings are for coffee and contemplation.
Holy shit.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, the number one Stranger Things podcast in the world, including the Upside Down. And in the top 20 on Spotify and TV and film, iTunes, we're up there.
We're up there.
And all thanks to you listeners, we're back. We're covering episode 8 of Stranger Things 4, volume 2. So we just finished Papa. We're going to be talking about it very soon. I always start off with a few business things right off the top, but I just want you all to know right now, Eastern Standard Time. I don't know if you guys know how time zones work. I'm not going to get into it. It's really complicated. Dustin can tell you more, but it's 5 a.m. here. We had to stay up all night because we want to get this to you folks as early as possible. And then we got to go to, our day jobs where we pay taxes and whatnot here shortly. So that's the only way to do it. There's no way around it. It is what it is. And we are filled with glee and weariness right now.
A little bit of mirth, a dash of mirth, I'd say.
A dash. I had some hibiscus tea. I could chalk it up to that.
Steve? Say what?
Are you feeling mirthful?
Oh, so much mirth. Mm-hmm. I'm filled to the gills in mirth.
Mm-hmm. He has gills.
Soup to nuts mirth. All right.
Get some of that mirth.
Let me sprinkle some mirth on you, my boy.
We've got plenty of mirth to go around. It's been a wild ride this season. The podcast has blown up, and we're so ecstatic about that. The show has been phenomenal, firing on all cylinders. And yeah, so you can email the show at any time. Many of you do, and I love it every time. I've got 41 emails to answer still of the hundreds that come in. I try to answer them personally for the ones that we don't read on the show. And so keep sending those in. That's streamingthingspod@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. You can follow us on Twitter @streamthingpod. We do monitor that pretty closely now. And so our plan is after we go to work, we'll come home and watch the finale and still get that episode out to you guys pretty soon. And then after that, I'm sure we'll do an overall recap of season 4 with some Stranger Things 5 predictions. And then probably like one last mailbag for Stranger Things. So we'll milk another 4 episodes, including this one, out of this season. And then after that, we will be covering Thor: Love and Thunder and Dawn are Crossing Streams and other things that we watch. I really, 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 really want to dive into House of Dragon and Rings of Power. We'll see what you guys think about that. If you guys want that kind of stuff or you have any thoughts about that, please write in and let us know where you want the show to go after this. We want you to stick around and also consider our Patreon. You can follow us, subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/streamingthings. That's patreon.com. patreon.com/streamingthings and subscribe at a variety of tiers and get different rewards. A bunch of bonus episodes and content. You can vote on polls for other movies that we're going to watch. Also, for those that don't know, we're giving away stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've been given some gifts from the Movies Anywhere app to give to our listeners. So we're going to pick three random listeners from our Patreon pool, three of the patrons, and they get a digital copy of It from 2017, starring Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things, Alien from 1979, Firestarter, the new one from 2022, as well as The Thing from 1982. A lot of Stranger Things influences in there. That was their bag. Movies Anywhere, if you don't know, is an app. You have to register to redeem the code to get these movies. But it can, you know, conglomerates, if you will, all of your films from Vudu, from Amazon Prime, from iTunes, all into one place. So you don't have to navigate your different libraries. And you can also watch them in the app. It's not a streaming service, but it is an app that allows you to purchase movies digitally and keep your library together. That's all the business news, I think. We just finished episode 8, entitled Papa. What could possibly go wrong for Papa in an episode titled Papa? We're not sure, but we'll find out soon. But first, the Mad Libs. If you guys didn't know, or if you forgot, it's been, I don't know, 3 or 4 days. I don't know how much ganja you smoke. You might be hanging out with Argyle all the time. We read a Mad Lib at the beginning of each episode and then finish it off at the end. Stranger Things themed, of course. Mm. Steve, let's do this.
This episode is titled ... by Nancy Wheeler.
Wait, there's the ellipses at the beginning?
There is, yeah. See, right there. Boom.
I did not believe you. I was just making sure I followed.
All right. Let's begin. Let's get these words, my friends. First up, I need a noun.
Peanut butter.
Give me a silly word.
Tart.
Tart? That's, pretty... you're coming at me hot with tart for silly word?
It's pretty silly. Say it.
Tart.
Yeah, does that sound silly to you?
I need an animal plural.
Anteaters.
Type of building.
Bungalow.
Nice. I like that.
Mm. That's a silly word.
That's a silly word. Person in the room.
Simon Pegg.
He's on a poster.
It counts. Simon Pegg hangs out with this guy. So I don't know if you knew this.
He's real quiet.
Yeah, he doesn't add much to the conversation.
Should we have included him in this? Would that have helped the show?
Yeah. He's like, he's just been here this whole time.
We could have had a podcast with Simon Pegg, but nah.
Be quiet, Simon.
Simon, this is not your time.
Yeah, okay? Simon does not say right now.
All right. No. Adjective.
Tart.
Sweet.
Crunchy.
Oh, we're going with crunchy?
Yeah, I can't tart? Use tart twice.
Number.
14.
Plural noun.
Ropes.
Occupation plural.
Fluffers.
Plural noun.
Trees.
Verb ending in ing.
Caressing.
Same silly word. So we get tart in here twice.
We almost said it three times.
God damn it. Adjective.
Cruel.
Noun.
Disco ball.
Plural noun.
Beards.
Adjective.
Sumptuous.
You heard the man. Write it down.
Last but not least, plural noun.
Nails.
Contraceptives.
Nails.
Okay. All right. Nails. And listener, tune in to the end of this episode to find out what these jabronis wrote for the story Ellipses by Nancy Wheeler.
That's right. That's what everybody's actually here for. But in the meantime, Chapter 8 of Stranger Things 4, Volume 2, nailed it.
There's a lot of numbers.
Papa. And Netflix describes it thusly. Nancy has sobering visions, and Elle passes an important test. Back in Hawkins, the gang gathers supplies and prepares for battle.
I love it when they call me Big Papa.
That's true.
This is a very Marty B episode.
I mean, if you're not talking more as Marty B than Steve in this episode, what are you even doing?
What am I even doing?
I mean, it's right there. It's the lowest hanging fruit I've ever seen in my life. And I've seen a lot of low fruits.
Will this be the episode that Steve finally learns restraint with his voices? Probably not.
I mean, our iTunes reviews would say that that's not necessary. Yeah. But yeah, this. How did it feel to be back, guys? I mean, was it? Are you a little disappointed? Are you ecstatic? Just overall,
they just jumped right into it, you know. And I guess it makes sense because it's just a part two, and I feel like they just never really planned on it being like a break and decided this after they were filming because they left off on a cliffhanger and then just jump right back into the action as if you were still doing the binge model. So I'm just like, oh, fuck, yeah, that's where we were at. Let's go. But no, I mean, goddamn, this episode was fucking awesome, right?
No, it was. Right? It was a great episode. It was a great episode. And I'm just honestly a little, and this is whatever, I'm going to be a little negative up at the top. And it has nothing to do with the actual content of the writing, but it's the entire...
My mirth has gone down.
It's the marketing plan that Netflix has employed around this show, right? I think there's some desperation. We all know that their stock has plummeted 60%, right? And they've let go, I think, of like 600 to 1,000 employees over the past month or two from their corporation. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I bet it does. So they've just like been panic marketing their tentpole Stranger Things. And there's fucking spoilers in everything that they're doing, right? Like, we did not need the two trailers that we got. There was so much. I talk shit in our trailer breakdown. Like, I don't think it was that bad, Steve. But at the same time, watching it today, I was like, how cool would it have been? Like when Hopper and the gang are walking up in Russia with the gun out because they hear the noise. And I already know what's in that room. It's a bunch of vats of Demogorgons and Demodogs with a little piece of the Mind Flayer in a box, right? That would have been way fucking cooler if I didn't know that.
That would have blown our minds.
And then when Eleven gets the collar put on, I'm like, oh, there's the collar that we saw in the trailer. So we knew this was going to happen. Nothing hit like it should have because of all of this marketing that nobody needed. Nobody that watched the first seven episodes of that amazing season was going to not watch this one. So I'm sorry if I'm getting loud. I'm just like, and
He's getting hot.
I check Twitter and Noah Schnapp just tweeted, oh God, you guys are going to be crushed when you see who dies. Like, this is what this cast is tweeting. And if I lost my fucking mind, you're telling a story. What is going on right now? Sorry. I just had to get that out.
No, dude, this is a safe place. You can let it all out. Get hot, baby. Let it out.
You're scaring Simon.
Simon has backed away towards the wall.
I'm British. I'm Simon. I don't know how he talks.
Was that your Simon Pegg?
Yeah, it was Simon Pegg, didn't he?
Oh, I'm British. Hello.
It was like the Paul Rudd's character from Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where he's like, oh, you sound like you're from London.
Oh, yeah.
And Russell Brand's like, I am. Anyway, so that was just my little rant. But yeah, the episode was great. It was great. I knew a lot of it was happening, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like you mentioned, a lot of the stuff that was shown in the trailer doesn't hit nearly as hard as it would have had we not had it spoiled. My favorite parts of this episode are the parts that weren't spoiled at all by the trailer.
Right.
Which so about I like am happy. 3 to 8 minutes, give or take.
The good thing, I will say this, I think 98% of all of the spoilery marketing was revealed in this episode.
Yeah.
I don't think we've seen very much at all of the finale. Are we correct in that?
There's little some shots, bits. But you're right. I think the vast majority is this episode.
Yeah. So that's something to look forward to. So the it opens with 11. This episode opens with 11 after, and there's like a little bit of a gate closing. So it's after the events that we've already seen with the back in time stuff with her and Vecna/1/Henry. And then jumps, like Andy said, straight to Nancy, because the opening with 11 seems to be kind of Vecna reliving those memories that Nancy can see. So he's got his own little psychic Nina going on, if you will, with Nancy there. Nancy's in one's memories. And everybody's panicking upstairs. I guess kind of.
It is kind of
in the right side up. Trying to look for music that might work to help Nancy, but they're going through Eddie's music. And then Robin's trying to list off all these 80s bands, which I did write down, but I didn't know if Steve was going to name those later in his egos, maybe.
I didn't catch what they were holding.
She says, "What? I'm looking for music. No Madonna, no Bowie, no Blondie.
Is music.
Where's all the music?"
He holds up Iron Maiden.
Is that what he held up? Okay, I couldn't make it.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Nice. Probably Eddie on the cover of that cassette there.
Yeah.
And then anyway, Vecna's stalking Nancy through there. And he says to her, "You've seen where I've been. I want you to see where I'm going." Something like that, right? To paraphrase. And so he's showing her the future. We see flashes, but it's not exactly what he's showing Nancy. Mm-hmm. And then he lets her go. He says, "Tell 11. I want you to tell 11. that motherfucker, you tell her I'm coming and tell her she owes me $20. We don't know. All kinds of stuff.
You go tell 11 to catch me outside. How about that?
Yeah, that's what he said. Back then it was weird.
Yes. Real 180 on that character.
Not threatening
Dr.
at all.
Phil was like, tell me more.
I will throw hands on that bitch.
Whatever went down. I did not see that coming. I did not see him letting Nancy go.
Yeah, we totally planned for this whole, like, we got to go back into the Upside Down and shred on Eddie's BC Rich guitar. And we wanted the Bruce Springsteen and we didn't get it.
We will get that.
We're going to get something like that.
Like Eddie's guitar thing is going to be the distraction that they need. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's hopefully not a sacrifice, because I have talked so much shit about how safe Eddie is. I honestly won't even be mad at myself. I just think that I was right, and that was the smart thing to do, is to subvert expectations and keep Eddie alive.
They're subverting the subversion by actually killing him.
They're gonna think that we're gonna think that they're gonna think, and therefore
they're gonna think we couldn't possibly do it a third time. But that's what we get them.
Always do what's least expected. We'll cut back to Russia, of course, and the powers.
Kombucha?
Yeah, come. Sorry, kombucha is the prison. Everybody knows
that.
Just
get it right.
They're rushing around trying to get the power back on. They're freaking out.
Rushing around. Got him.
I didn't mean to do that. We see Yuri still floundering with the inability to talk, a dirty sock in his mouth, I think, and his mouth wrapped up. And then we get a beautiful moment between Hopper and Joyce, because we didn't get to actually see them talk, right? It was just an embrace, if you will. And we get to see them connect, and I love that moment, because Joyce, they had a second fake funeral. That's the second funeral for a non-dead person that Joyce has had to attend.
Yeah.
Which is weird to think about.
One for Will in season one, and now for Hopper. And apparently he's the hero of Hawkins.
Yeah, that was a cool moment. He's like, did anybody show up? And like the way that David Harbour delivers those kinds of lines is awesome. And she's like, she kind of sounds like she's talking to her kids, though, you know? Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's like tons.
You were like super popular.
I hung up all of your drawings. Joyce, I don't draw. Oh, sorry. I get so many fake funerals.
So I get it mixed up.
Because the first one was for my boy.
Yeah, that was a great scene. I loved how they were able to connect like that. And you're right. Just that nice quiet moment after all the tension from the Vecna stuff. And we didn't really get to see an extended version of Joyce and Hopper kind of connecting last we left them. It was just kind of a longing and, you know, heartfelt.
And that was one of my favorite moments of that episode. Yeah. So it worked, but it was nice
for sure. See his mustache growing back as he was talking to her. Like, he's becoming himself again.
It's like Samson. It's cool, though, because they had him lose some weight or something, I guess, because it's just like he looks haggard.
He looks emaciated. And like, it was funny. I actually had that same thought and I wasn't going to bring it up, but he looks more like himself in that quick little shot between the two of them.
I agree.
100%.
That's a great, great catch.
I love his line. He says something to the effect of like when she says that, you know, you're the hero of Hawkins. He said something to the effect of, you know, they always said people would like me more when I'm dead or something like that. Like, I just like, yeah, that's such a Hopper thing to say.
Yeah. And it's cynical in an endearing way. It reminds me of my dad. Mm-hmm. So my dad was, they called him Eeyore. He had a rough life. He was always kind of like that. So yeah, I love that moment. And we cut back to the Russians kind of freaking out eventually.
That Demogorgon is having a bad day.
Yeah. He climbs the wall and he really gentle with the five Russians there for a moment. I wrote down what kills Demogorgons, because up until this point, we've never really seen bullets be effective against any kind of Demogorgon. Sometimes Demodogs, like when Hopper shoots a Demodog, it dies. Mm-hmm. But when Redshirts shoot Demodogs, nothing. That's been my experience from season two.
Well, maybe it's a thing where Demodogs, they haven't developed, you know, the hardened skin that deflects bullets.
Well, when Hopper kills the one that's laying on the table, that's what I thought in my head.
It like directly in the mouth too.
But the four Russians, they unload. Let's say it's 30 round clips.
150 bullets, yeah, give or take.
Modestly 120.
Yeah.
At least. All straight. They're not like Stormtrooper in it either. They all hit. And then the Demogorgon's like, God damn it.
I love how the Demogorgon goes after the one Russian that's like, hey, don't shoot that thing. Yeah. Guys, don't shoot. Why are you attacking me?
And it's like he
was on your side.
It seemed like that scene was weird because it's like they want to protect the asset was the vibe that I got. Like, hey, we don't want to kill it. But at the end, it seemed more like because the way that it was cut panning to the locked room because of the trailer, we knew it was in it. He was like more aware of, this is going to piss off all the other ones, or this is like going to upset the hive mind, or, you know, it'd be more dangerous if we shot it.
Oh, interesting. There's
two different ways to read that scene, the way it was shot. I feel like.
Yeah. When there, you hear all the screeching happening behind the locked door, I was like, ooh, it's like, it's not hurting that one. It's hurting the other one.
Right. And that's the vibe I got. He was like, not that I want to protect the asset. It's, we're going to be in more trouble if you anger it or attack it. Right. But then
ended up not being the case.
Yeah. They're all pretty dead or tied up. I thought it
was
up.
Interesting that the one that was tied up screaming was seemingly in mid autopsy.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they had like cut open its chest.
Chest was open up and I don't know. I just thought that was kind of interesting.
It was neat. It was very gruesome, dark, because we know what those creatures are. We know what they can do. So the fact that they even exist in that room is scary enough. And the fact that these folks are twisted enough to, I don't know, experiment on them, entertain it. It's all very... Yeah. What's the word? It's disturbing. Mm-hmm. That's the word. It's how very
they,
disturbing.
How did they get all those things?
Yeah, they got a bunch of pickled Demogorgons in there. They're pickled Demogorgons.
Pickled Demogorgons.
Which is a delicacy in Russia, at least Soviet Union Russia.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It is very good.
How did they get a mind flayer in a box?
Yeah.
That is hard to do. That's not a philosophical rhetorical question. It sounds like it is. How do you get a mind flayer in a box?
The only box we have seen a mind flayer get trapped in is Will's mouth.
It's true.
And that's the only box we've seen.
Yeah. We don't know how to. I'm staying a mile away from any jokes that are coming to mind.
I think, yeah, same.
I don't know. I don't know how any of those creatures exist. I thought they grabbed the one Demogorgon from Hawkins before they ran. Like, that was kind of feasible how they would have trapped a Demogorgon. Who knows, right? They're Russians. They're very sturdy folk. Mm-hmm. However, this is just beyond the realm of, I have no idea. I have no predictions.
There's definitely something happening in Russia that we are not privy to.
And I also feel like very saddened by that because it means we can't, either A, we can't leave Russia.
Yeah, it has to now stay a location.
Which is upsetting.
I'm over it.
Or we come back there in season 5, which might be worse.
You're over Russia as a location?
Yeah, man. Like, I had my fun, and I got to see the Colosseum. I'm ready to go home.
Listen, Russia's a place you go visit for a couple days, but you don't stay
there. We're all aware of the Colosseum's in Italy, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I was talking about the Colosseum, like, where they watched the Demogorgon fighting the people.
No, that's what I took it as.
I had my fun in Russia. I went and saw the Colosseum, the Leaning Tower. I
saw the Great Wall.
Great Wall. We know our history here. That's not even the right subject, really. So then Antonov sees, it's a really funny moment. We all had a good chuckle because they're discovering all of this like deeply disturbing shit, all these Demogorgons and mind flayers and Demodogs. And then Antonov runs in, Enzo, and he gets like, I found something. And they're like, yeah, no shit. We found stuff.
We have found a lot of things.
There's like crazy creature in here.
Yeah, but I found great.
They have air conditioning.
And then they end up climbing out through the grate, but not quite yet. We cut back to 11 getting brought back. She's being, what's the word? You guys always tell me.
Defibrillated.
Defibrillated? Mm-hmm. Can we verb it?
Yeah. Defibrillator.
It's a defibrillator. Yeah, it does. She's getting hit with the defibrillator, a little bit of oxygen. She's being brought back.
I wrote down 11 wants the smoke. Because they give her the,
I don't know why.
They give her the oxygen mask, and then when they remove it, she's like, no more.
Oh, she's, yeah,
like,
that stuff hits.
She has that thing like, no, more hit.
I thought she was taking it off.
She was getting schmacked.
She was getting schmacked. At one point, Brenner's like, no, you can give it to her.
Let her take another puff.
Let her take a toke. My little girl likes to party.
It's puff, puff.
It calms her down. And then, she's literally brought back?
I'd rather her be doing it here with us instead of out there with people we don't know. I'm what you call a cool parent.
And then she gets her powers back. And she's able to lift Nina. And
hey,
it looked
what
like
the fuck?
Marty B was a little upset, right? Because he does care for Nina.
That whole time his butthole was clenched so hard. Like, please don't drop her.
Set her down.
Set her down. There's a lot of water.
Dr. Owens and I have a date later.
I bet him he couldn't hold his breath for longer than a minute. I have a lot riding on this. 11, don't ruin it for me, please. I'll give you the smoke.
We find out Nina, I'll give you the smoke back. Nina weighs 10,000 pounds, right? That's 5 tons.
It's a sturdy gal.
So 11's got her powers back. Cut to the Cali crew, the surfer boy, pizza crew, and we get this speech. Mike's really insecure. Right. He's afraid that. And I went back and forth on this when he first started to talk, as usual with Mike. I was like, not feeling it. Shut up. And he just mumbled, shut up. And then I kind of dug what was going on with this character, because at first he's like, oh, I'm just afraid she won't need me anymore. And I was mad. Right. Like, of course she doesn't fucking need you. Right. She's her own person, man. You're still 11 in your mind. Speaking of 11. But then I was like, you know what? This is honest. He's discovering that he's with this amazing person who's basically a superhero. And he's not only just a dude, he's Mike. So he's like less than a normal dude, you know? And so that's gotta be rough. And I really kind of enjoyed, I think Finn Wolfhard's performance was good in that moment. I think the writing is honest and going somewhere necessary for his character. And then we get to see, and I felt so good about this, we get to see the painting. And we called it. It's the whole crew. I didn't say they'd be fighting a dragon, but everybody was so convinced it would be like this portrait of Mike. Like on a horse with shirtless with Will behind him.
With his arms
And I was like, that is not what that's gonna be. And I am so vindicated and happy that it was the whole crew, apparently commissioned by 11, and he tried to cheer Mike up.
I don't think it actually is.
Correct.
Yeah, I know.
So let's
Did
also
you guys think it was gonna be better than it was?
Oh, yeah, painting wasn't that good.
Yeah, like the dragon was rolling out. I'm like, oh shit, not bad. And then it got to the people. And I'm like, fuck.
What if Mike, just being piece of shit Mike is, was like, not your best work, and then just kept talking.
God damn.
So it's the whole party, and then Will breaks down. And yes, as Andy alluded to, we were also pretty wrong about something. It looks pretty obvious now that Will is romantically interested in Mike, which we knew he was gay, but we just didn't quite want him to be crushing on Mike specifically. And that seems to be pretty obviously the case. We're all agreed on that.
Yeah.
Like not even anything to talk about at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's super obvious because he gets into this. Will goes into this kind of diatribe of like, Eleven thinks you're great, and she thinks you're the heart, and
she loves you so much.
She loves you so. And he's like starting to cry. And then the camera purposely cuts to Jonathan, and you can tell Jonathan's watching this happen as he drives, like, oh no, I'm gonna have to.
He's not talking about 11.
He's talking about himself.
And 11 definitely didn't ask him to paint that. He put the heart there on purpose.
I will say this is probably my least favorite shot in the episode, is when he finishes the thing. He finishes his soliloquy, and Mike's like, wow, thanks, Will, that's great. And then Will turns and starts crying, but you could see in the background Mike's just kind of like,
yeah,
yeah,
that fucking made me feel pretty so good much about better this.
That's why are you crying, bro?
Yeah. I hate that too, because this is the kind of shit that makes me hate Mike, and it's almost not even Mike's fault.
Yeah, that's not,
it's the Duffer's fault.
Yeah,
because you have this super serious moment for a character that I love, and I've seen him go through pure hell. He's destroyed. He's just sacrificed himself essentially to help Mike feel better. And you just see his little smug ass in the background, like, oh, turds, dude. Like, I am cool. And it's, while this guy you love is just crying in the window. And even Jonathan, who's way up in the front, can see he's crying. So apparently Mike can see too. Mike's just like, you all right, man? Dude, the painting is good, but it's not worth crying over, man. And then we get a glimpse of the past. We cut back to Brenner and the gang, a glimpse of the past, and some exposition. And Brenner knows a lot more than we thought he knew, at least for me, about Henry I Vecna, all that stuff. And he explains it to 11. And we see how he actually watched the security footage, as we knew he would, of 11 fighting Henry. So he finds out what had happened.
Dude, he's like mouth open, like drooling, watching this shit. Like, oh, I'm going to use this so hard.
Wow. Yeah. He's like, this is the power that I've been craving.
I really hope this doesn't awaken anything in me.
Right. And it's
a little community joke.
Yep.
I didn't watch that show. So I was just like, moving on. And they, I just found it interesting that he and Dr. Owens know that it's Henry that's doing this in Hawkins because the kills look similar.
Yeah, I was surprised that Dr. Owens kind of threw the photos down. Like, I knew it was him because of the eyes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've knew ever since the diner. That's how long I've known. Yeah, so it was the eyeball kills that that led him to it. And that's when the big trailer speech, as I'll now refer to it, comes from Brenner. And he basically tells L, like, hey, it's all going down. It's not good. It's not looking good. Probably everybody's going to die. You might die. It's actually really likely. And then Dr. Owens has this sarcastic, oh, way to take it to your, you know, give it to her gently. And
yeah, it was cool. Not ominous at all. It yeah. was awesome.
It was a great Paul Reiser moment for sure.
Yeah, he loved his pencil dam metaphor. Like this pen, it's like a dam. Like this pen, he just slowly crushes a pencil. And
this is actually like the third time people have used pencils to explain complicated science.
Wait, you're not
show.
Getting it? Let me get another pencil.
If this episode, yeah. if this episode had taken place in the first three seasons, this would have been a Dr. Clark speech.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was like 37 broken pencils on the ground. She's not really that bright, is she?
All right, let's
don't
do it
know
again.
A better way.
Somebody get me a number two pencil.
It's not snapping hard enough. She doesn't get it. And she does like jump too. A little jump scare pencil. And then Elle runs off angrily because they tell her she's not ready. She's not strong enough to go help her friends. And she goes to look for them in the in-between, as we call it on this show. Mm-hmm. Cut back to Nancy telling everybody in the trailer what she experienced with Vecna. And we find out she saw the future. She saw, I think I caught most of it, dead soldiers, giant creature, probably the Mind Flayer with an open mouth or maw, an army of monsters invading Hawkins, right? She says something was on fire, too. I didn't catch it.
In the movie Army of Darkness, it's basically going to be that.
Yeah, I had a chainsaw for an arm. It was crazy.
She already has a boomstick. So.
She does have the boomstick. Yeah,
she's halfway there.
And then there's four gates for the four chimes of the clock. And so they figured out pretty quick once he gets the fourth kill, that's when the army will invade Hawkins. Mm-hmm. So one more death is all he needs to take over the famed city of Hawkins, Indiana.
And it's seemingly still Max. Is what they kind of come down to is Max is still marked by Vecna to be that fourth kill.
Kind of. I feel like Max, the way Max phrases it, I don't, is it this scene that happens where she decides? Yes.
Yeah.
So Max kind of phrases it like, I'm good with Kate Bush, as we all are. We're all safe with Kate Bush.
We love Kate Bush.
But I'm going to forgo the Kate Bush to set a trap is her plan. For you, a terrible plan because I cannot have anything bad happen to Max, but he would move on to someone else if she didn't forego the Kate Bush, but they don't know who that is. And that's a risk. They're just going to die. And then they're the world's over. Right. Mm-hmm. The army invades, by the way, Vecna's definitely going to kill a fourth person. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's definitely going to be an army to fight in actual Hawkins. Is that what we think?
I don't know. So like that sequence of Nancy describing the four chimes, four deaths, four Blake Maislin.
Four.
It felt like she was just describing season five, but like, I don't know, maybe this is all going to go down in this 2.5 hour finale.
Oh, it 100% is. I think there's going to be like a 3 or 4 year gap between this and five, and they're going to defeat Vecna sort of, but they're going to lose some close friends, mm-hmm. and then, but not completely, right? They're going to completely lose them, but they're not going to completely defeat the upside down folk. And then it'll happen for the last time in season five. But I'm really scared about this plan. I got to say, what were you saying, Steve?
I was going to say this whole time, Eleven is eavesdropping on their conversation. She's in the in-between spying on her friend.
Yes.
And I really liked how that was filmed because obviously, Eleven's in the in-between. It's all
telephone
dark.
The telephone floating.
Yeah, I love how they kept elements of the set kind of like floating in the air. It was it added a lot to that visually.
And it's also brilliant because we know that Eleven doesn't know anything about what's been going on in Hawkins other than what Dr. Brenner and Owens just told her. And so this is a brilliant way to just catch her up. Like as an audience, you're just like, oh, okay, we don't know what she heard or didn't hear. We can just assume she's all the way up to speed on what's been going on in Hawkins now. And that's just awesome.
And they're in Max's trailer. Is that where they are?
I think so. And they're calling. It's important maybe to note, they're trying to call Joyce, maybe to reach 11 for help, I guess. And the number is busy the entire time because, of course, Joyce and all them are in Russia. So
yeah. And I love how Dustin's like, oh, Joyce has a telemarketer call. That's why we can't get through.
I don't know why the phone's busy, but
because she's on the phone all the time.
No.
I mean, why is it actually busy though?
Oh, probably because the government is doing something in some way.
Yeah. Either that or the house got so destroyed, I'm sure the phone could have easily gotten off the hook.
They did it the hard way.
Yeah. they did.
Took the phone off the hook and just left it there.
This is the hard way. Huge mess to clean up and your phone bill off the charts.
This scene does have it begins a running joke that I was a big fan of, and that is mainly Robin going, what are we calling him? Vecna?
I love Henry? That they called attention to the fact that it's so confusing. I love that.
Yeah, because we were doing that on the show too, like Vecna, Henry, so it's funny that they're doing it as well in the universe.
Yeah, they anticipated our confusion and helps us out a lot when you go meta with it. Appreciate that, Duffers. They're listening. They always are.
But to answer your question, yes, we were definitely in Max's trailer because that was Eddie's like, do you have like a mask or something? Maybe like something you would wear. Trying to get candy and, you know.
Do you have a mask when you're trying to get candy?
Maybe something you would have worn in like season two. I don't know.
Based off of a John Carpenter movie.
I have this William Shatner mask that's turned inside out. Should we get that?
Nice. Nice deep cut there on the lore there, Steve. Cut.
If you didn't know, that's what the Michael Myers mask is made out of in the original Halloween.
And we cut back to Hopper. They get out with the van. They crash through the front gate and they get shot at a bunch, but they miss all the bullets. None of them go through the door, just the windows. So luckily nobody's hurt.
Demo dogs and this van, impervious to bullets, all right?
That's all we know. Not demo dogs, full-grown Demogorgons.
Thank you for that correction.
This van.
I'm so happy that you keep me honest on the show. Thank you so much.
I do. My people do not take kindly to people escaping. So we need to keep running. That's what I love that line because Antonov, they're like, woo! And he's like, oh no, do not celebrate yet. My people... super mad when people escape. Most prison guards don't like it, but in Russia, extra mad. We better run.
Extra mad. I do think it's funny.
Super pissed.
That scene opens up with the one Russian guard yelling, son of a bitch. And then when they get away, he goes, son of a bitch.
There's his only two lines. It's amazing.
In the credits, they'll list him as the son of a bitch Russian.
Son of a bitch in Russian. And so they realize quickly that they need Yuri's help because Joyce and Murray, of course, crashed the plane on the way in. Not their fault. It seemed necessary at the time. And they need Yuri's help. So they unmask Yuri. It was good to see his character back. I thought his line delivery was great. He made some really unique, entertaining faces.
That dude's really good at being just completely smarmy. Like, he's such a smarmy motherfucker.
Did we talk about on the show? He's like a famous actor. In Russia or another, it's not even Russia. I don't think we talked about it on the show.
I don't think we did.
It's not Russia. It's a Slavic country. He's a huge actor there. He's very famous. Okay. And so he's very good at what he does. He's been doing it a long time. I don't have any more information than that. It's not like I'm a professional or do this on a podcast or anything. Why would I know stuff like that?
Right into streamingthingspot@gmail.com.
Yeah. Let us know if you're a fan of the cinema of Czechoslovakia, whatever that is, wherever country he's from. So they're going to employ Yuri's help against Murray's advice. And we cut back to the Hawkins gang. And they've decided that they're going to go to Warzone. It's an ad in the paper and some kind of like hillbilly club or something like that. Yeah. And get a bunch of guns and weapons and stuff. And then Eddie hotwires an RV. They all climb through the back of the window. And I felt so bad for that little family. They were just out relaxing in the trailer park. Set the awning out already. Yeah. We were just getting some sun.
It was a nice day out. The weather was great.
Had a little bit of music playing, I'm sure. Yeah. Probably Lynyrd Skynyrd, let's be honest.
And you know what? I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
Free as a bird out there just sitting. And then Eddie learned how to hotwire cars from his dad. And why didn't he drive? I didn't understand that.
He winked at the camera like Steve's going to drive.
I know.
Okay.
Well, I think Eddie specifically isn't driving because he's still hiding out. Right.
Well, Erica was like, you're not going to drive. And it was like, why? He's older than Steve. He's been in high school for like 16 years.
You're talking about Eddie, right?
Yeah.
Well, again, I think it's because he's wanted.
They don't want him in the window.
They don't want him in this giant window that is the Winnebago.
That's fair.
And I think that's also going back to the joke that Steve didn't drive in the earlier seasons. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it's just like a fun little wink and nod. Like Steve's finally driving.
Steve do be driving, though.
Yeah, but there's been jokes in previous season where he's like not driving.
Well, he was beat up when Max was driving his car. That was a big thing. That was fun.
That was fun.
God, good old times, man. We've had some good times.
We've had a great time. Look at us. Look at us.
Look at us. Mirth. And we cut back to 11. She's pissed because she wants to go help her friends. Now that she knows they're in grave danger, Owens is like, they're going to be fine, but they're definitely not going to be, right? And even he knows that. So Owens decides, you know what? We got to let her go. It's her choice. We told her this was not a prison, you know, and because Brenner's whole argument is she's not strong enough. You're walking now. I mean, eventually you're going to run. And he's been listening to a lot of Kate Bush. So
I
he's
need
like,
you to run up that hill.
Yeah.
I need you to get up there and make a deal with God and get him to swap out places.
And then fly.
And yeah.
It was actually endearing, and I didn't know how to feel about it, but I got the sense in this scene that Brenner didn't want her to go die. He was actually worried about her, and that was kind of the basis in his own twisted way for all of what happens after this, is he doesn't think she's strong enough. Yeah, sure, but it's that she's going to get hurt if she goes out now, right? And this becomes obvious later, I think, when we get the scene that we get at the end with Dr. Brenner.
This is speaking towards something we're definitely going to talk about in a few minutes, but I love the complexity that this relationship is.
I do too.
I was worried for most of the season that they were just going to kind of just gloss over a lot of that complexity for the service of redeeming a character that maybe doesn't need it. I'm so happy that not only did they not redeem this character fully, but they also added even more complexity to their relationship.
Yeah, there's a moment at the end of this episode that I can't talk about very much because I want to harp on it in my puddings. But I agree with you, Steve. I think we're on the same track there. So we cut back to the RV. Everybody gets a little moment, right? Steve and Nancy get cute. Steve talks about his dreams of having 6 children and driving across the country. And Nancy seems really impressed by that. Like, oh, man, I don't want to bear those children, but I'd like to be on that trip. So maybe
adopt 6 children.
Yeah. We can figure this out. And they seem to be having a moment. And then Lucas sees them having a moment. And he's like, ah, shit, I'm going to run back and talk to my girl.
My moment.
It's my time. Action. So he runs back and talks to Max. Tries to convince her not to be the bait, which I also agree. I don't think that's a good idea, Max. I might not end well. I don't want to see her in danger again. That explains what we saw from the trailer. Sorry.
I think the scene with Max and Lucas is incredibly well acted by both parties.
Absolutely.
Like Sadie Sink's awesome, but like this scene in particular, I think was a really good example of what Caleb can do.
Yeah, Caleb McLaughlin's crushing it.
Yeah, he's crushing it this season. And especially these two. I've been very, very impressed with them this season. And even this scene, which is pretty, you know, it's a small scene. It's just them. You know, Lucas is worried about Max. He doesn't want her to like put herself in danger. And Max is very resolute. Like, no, I know the danger. I know the threat. We can't let someone who doesn't know this succumb to this. It's got to be me. I got to be the person.
And it's cool. I'm just going to stay in the light.
Like what?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Let's hide in the light.
We're going to hide in the light.
Hide in the light.
What?
It's a good memory.
And now he's just like, oh, okay, you're going to hide in the light. Cool. Like, it just felt like, okay, what? Why is that the plan now? Like, I don't know.
Well, she just had experience with that because she used her memories of the light or the good memories to escape him the first time, right? Because it wasn't the music. I think a lot of people got this wrong watching it the first time. Like, it's not Kate Bush that saves her. It's Kate Bush opens the gateway or jogs her a little bit and gives her the ability to maybe escape, that she does all that on her own.
Yeah, because music activates so many memories for us as human beings. Like, you listen to a song, you immediately think of, mm-hmm. you have a memory and emotion attached to that song. So the song is just an actuator for the light memories.
I see. Okay.
And maybe it's a little too philosophical for an explanation of like a military plan, but I really love this scene for like the symbolism of the entire theme of this season, where because she says, he only sees the darkness in us, right? Meaning, you know, Henry's a very twisted, tortured soul. I think a tragic figure, not the ultimate villain of this show at all. I think it's just a tragic figure, much like Darth Vader, like I've said many times. And I think that her saying that is all of us that have these issues, you know what I mean? This trauma that causes us to hurt people, right? So this trauma that we all experience twists our perspective of the world. And so now, because of the trauma that Henry experienced, he's only able to see the bad in other people. And she said, you know, the way to fight that is to focus on the light in me, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So she's going to try to hold on to those good memories. I just thought that was beautiful. So you're right. That's a little awkward as a battle plan.
I thought that the scene was beautiful and like that it was acted wonderfully. Like you guys said, Caleb was crushing it. And I agree with it thematically. It was just like, it's the whole crew riding in the Winnebago to the place. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to hide in the light. That's what I'm going to do. I'm just like, when did that become the plan? They're just like, okay, cool. Do that.
Well, it was her own private plan. All she told them was, I'm going to be the bait and you guys better kill him real quick. And then mm-hmm. she's telling Lucas, like, mm-hmm. I think I'm going to be okay. I can hang out in there for a good while.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Kind of going back to what you said, it's a parallel. Max's plan is a parallel to Eleven's journey, because Eleven unlocked her power by remembering a memory of true love.
Yeah.
And so it's working in tandem with each other.
Yeah.
These messages.
It's the theme, man. Happy thoughts. Really, this is a giant Bob Ross episode this whole season.
We're just going to paint a happy little tree.
Happy little tree.
Put a happy little Nina behind the tree.
Good cut, Andy.
Oh, Robert, I love your work.
And then, yeah, Lucas ends the scene by saying, well, if you start to float, I'm calling Kate Bush.
That's, you know, those are words we can all live by, right?
And Steve liked to imagine he's literally calling Kate Bush. Yeah. Kate, we need you.
Yeah, I turned to Chris when he said that, like, wouldn't you shit if Dustin pulls out his, like, walkie and is like, Kate, code red. And she's like, I'll be there.
That's how she talks. Yeah, I'll be there. She's a Southern American woman. Are we sure about that?
Did I put a Southern twang?
I'm
bringing iced tea.
I was trying to use her like the way she sings in Wuthering Heights, but which is a little, it's a little more wild and crazy.
Like Florence and the Machine.
Have you ever heard that song?
Probably not. You know my music taste.
I just want to see them cut to Kate Bush and she like hangs up the phone and like gets all her shit ready and leaves Vermont.
Her agent's like, what are you doing, Kate? The gang need me in Hawkins.
No, it'll be more like Superman's cameo in Shazam. Where it's just like, you don't actually see her face. We just assume it's Kate Bush, you know, because they can't actually get Kate Bush to be on the show. Anyway, we're way out of into digress territory. So cut back to Yuri and his big, you know, I'm going to take you to a plane. I got a nice plane, but it's actually a shitty helicopter. And then
with no rotors,
Kachinka.
And I'm really confused. It looks like a Star Wars vehicle. Am I stupid about aviation? I'm sure it's a real helicopter, but I'm like, what is that?
Yeah, I mean, about aviation?
Yeah.
It looked like
specifically
like a hobbyist helicopter.
Just aviation?
Like, yeah. Everything else, I'm really smart.
It looked like a hobbyist helicopter.
Yeah.
Like you can buy that shit. There was one, and a group of friends in a group text were like, guys, it's only 10 grand. Like, if we each chip in 2 G's, we can go flying around. It's going to be awesome. We didn't do it, but we thought about it.
Yeah, you pussed out.
But nobody pointed out the fact that it didn't have any rotors, and it kept going to that wide shot from the angle up, and they're like, oh, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. It's like, it's not built.
It needs a little tune-up is what he was saying. And maybe that's part of the scene that's funny it's supposed to be not even inoperable, not just a helicopter, but inoperable.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's implied because all the other characters are like, should I shoot him now? Like,
oh, okay. Yeah, fair.
Yeah, well, helicopters aren't meant to go super far even when they're working. So I thought that was mainly the problem. And then I was confused by the type of chopper.
Well, there's
that too. Yeah. And also.
Also that.
Right. And then so as a backup plan, they decide to get a message to Dr. Owens. And then we find out how collect calls work in the Soviet Union. Not great. Complicated process involving the KGB.
They collect you.
You're like, yeah. Can you connect me to my relative? And they're like, maybe.
To talk about what?
We will get KGB to verify you have relatives.
That will be $3.25 and your life.
Do you have peanut butter? We will take that.
Love that shit. And then we cut back to war zone.
Ah, crunchy. Wait,
oh my God. You know what probably happens in the war zone, Steve?
What?
You know what's probably going on in the war zone?
War games!
Yes! People that didn't listen to that episode.
I was trying to get him to hit it before. I'm like, thanks. Get it.
I was writing down notes and I see Andy just gesticulating towards me wildly. I'm just like, what?
Press the button.
What the fuck do you want?
Press the button, Steve. You're the button pusher.
War games!
So they're all just shopping for knives and guns like you can do in certain rural towns, especially in the 80s. Even children can walk around, just throw big giant knives and shotguns into shopping carts and whatnot. It's America. It's a thing, unfortunately.
That place is popping.
Y'all, it was very busy, but it is Indiana. So you can imagine that's the event of the season when there's the war zone there.
There's actually a store just like that if you go towards
Walmart.
No, but like if you go towards Gatlinburg, there's a giant store. It's like three stories tall and it's just like knives, or it's just like it just says that, but you walk in, it's like there's more than knives
it's,
in here.
It's weapons and it's spelled with an H.
Yeah, weapons.
You guys want some weapons?
Oh man. Yeah, that place was popping. Yeah. But we see Robin's crush in there.
Vicky's her name, Vicky. I'm 99% sure.
Yeah.
I never noticed before. I think she intentionally, and this is a ego, I guess, but she intentionally looks like Molly Ringwald, right?
I thought so too. Mm-hmm.
With the hat, like the 16 candles hat. She's got Ducky's hat on. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's 100% got to be intentional. But yeah, she's in there with a bow, a male bow. Very upsetting to Robin.
But he's in college, we find out later.
Yeah.
There's something.
That was a weird combo.
There's something amiss in this situation.
He should have been graduated by now. That was Steve's silly way of trying to cheer her up, I guess.
They did linger on it where, like, because Robin sees her and gets upset and leaves. And then Vicky notices Robin do this, and you can kind of there's something to the look that she has.
Yeah, yes. It definitely seemed like a beard relationship where she's just trying to assimilate into normal society, and it's like a betrayal to Robin. That's the dynamic that I think that scene was trying to establish.
100%. Or she would have just saw her and been like, oh, some chick from band. Don't know why she's upset, but there was a moment there for sure.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I think that she does reciprocate Robin's feelings.
There's hope for Robin's love life.
There is. There is indeed. And I also think Robin's 100% safe. Guys, don't worry. But I haven't seen the finale yet. But that's just my theory, especially based on this scene. Jason's also there with all his creepy shooty ball buddies.
Shooty balls? Shooty hoops?
Yeah, shooty hoops. Sorry. Shooty balls, way different game. Yeah.
Why are they getting those guns?
And Jason has gone full psychopath creep now. He's so menacing and not cool. To Nancy. You don't be mean to Nancy, not to me.
They even key lit him with a red light, you know, to accentuate how insane he is.
And he grabs her shotgun and presses down on her, trying to find out where all the other Hellfire Club kids are. He's very, very, very not cool.
Where's your brother, Nancy?
Yeah.
Or his friends.
He's actually in California, motherfucker. Way off. All right.
I love how she's got the shotgun and he forcefully grabs her, and no one in this gun store is like, hey man, why don't you lay off?
Dude, Jesus, the whole Christ, scene. The guy selling her the shotgun was standing right there. Mm-hmm. He's just watching. Oh, that's a pretty good way to grab a shotty right like, there.
God
he's
damn,
right.
I love this country.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Was that woman talking to you funny?
Nancy, you better listen to this boy. He's got a Letterman jacket. He knows. He's got good trigger discipline. I can tell.
Uh-huh. I can tell.
I can tell. And all his friends are here.
Yeah. Anybody in that jacket? 20% off. Just don't let these women sass you. Yeah. Don't let these women folks sass you.
I do think it's funny how they're in the store for several minutes, and like we get this kind of foreboding scene with Nancy and Jason, and then it cuts to Erica, and it's kind of comical where Erica's like, oh no, letter jacket, and then she turns, oh no, more of them. Yeah, she goes, oh, there's more of them over here too.
That's how I felt in high school.
Yeah. They're everywhere. They're gonna make fun of me.
I'm just colored on my fingernails in Sharpie.
Oh, you were one of those kids?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, no. I was dunking balls. Is that how you say it, Amy?
Shooting balls, dude.
Anyway, any hoozle. We cut back to the California crew.
It's 5:30 a.m., baby.
They're looking for Nina. And we get this hilarious exchange where Argyle gets to shine and he posits, hey, what if Nina's a small woman? Have you ever thought of that? Which is a pretty fair point. She might be small enough to hide behind a tree. And even Jonathan, as high as he is, not... This is not Jesus a good time for Argyle. Right, yeah, Argyle. Definitely not a small woman hiding behind a tree.
I love how Mike's like, how is he still high?
Yeah. It's been a 9-hour drive, but he's so high. He's like, already? When we say we're there. So they start freaking out. They can't find it. Nothing's. It's just a desert. So
I like to think of Nina as a large gal.
Not a tiny woman.
A sturdy gal that we all can rely on.
Argyle goes wandering off calling, Nina! Nina, man.
Does he like walk by a bush and then he like looks,
he looks behind it, yeah, like, to see if
you in there?
See if Nina was behind the tree. And then he finds some fatties. So the fat car tracks, right? I mean, these are not just any car tracks. These are fatties. You know what that means? Military.
Military.
You know that game in Office Space that a guy creates, jump to conclusions? I'm with it, though. I mean, it's pretty logical. Fatties do mean military. Head on down.
And I
especially
think,
where they are in the middle of the desert, at the exact coordinates Susie gave them.
And the boys are looking at the tires. So they're like, yes, we have seen military grade tires. We are in Stranger Things. We have seen these things. And
100%.
We're not even listening to Argyle at this point.
We were in a giant John Wick shootout like 10 hours ago. Yeah. This is plausible stuff. Let's head on out. And we cut back to inside the secret lab bunker. And Brenner has betrayed Dr. Owens.
Gasp! I loved how this turn happened because before we get into the bunker, it shows the quote-unquote bad government led by Sullivan.
I was like confused.
Riding towards the base. And so it's been so long, I don't remember what the people who work at the Nina complex, like the guards, I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I don't know what Sullivan's men look like. So, I don't exactly. Yeah,
when that guy showed up, he's like, hey, Doc, looking sad. I'm like, oh, no, the bad government made it in already. Yeah. No. Psych, yeah. It's Dr. Brenner's man because he's turned on them all.
Well, exactly. Now we have the good government, that. The bad government, and the good bad government.
Yes. And
so we got to keep
there's
them
two
all
factions
straight.
In the good government now.
Listen, I'm confused. I got to go to a diner.
Now the bad government's got to have some good guys, and we're going to meet them. And
hope
now.
Got to be. They're just doing what they're talking. They're just following orders.
Yeah. That never bit anyone in the ass.
And then she stands up to Papa. Because Papa locks her in the room and he's like, what does he say, Steve?
You have a terrible wound.
He's like,
you're not ready.
You can go out the door, but they're going to kill Dr. Owens.
Yeah, that's really menacing, right?
I mean, that's all he could come up with because he really can't stop Eleven from doing anything.
Yeah, the only way he can stop her is appeal to her humanity and say, like, you know that guy that's really cool and wears a sweater vest and hangs out with me on the weekends and Nina and we drink Bud Lights all the time? I'll kill him.
I'll find another Nina buddy. Nina's so cool that won't take any time at all.
I have Kate Bush on speed dial. I'm sure she'll hang out Nina with me.
Everybody's got Kate's number in this universe.
I bet she loves Bud Light too.
And it's very, very sad to watch what happens, but I loved it. And then, but she stands up to him and she tells him, I'm not a monster. You're a monster. You caused it all. And she comes to this actualization and realization that I was just a tool that you manipulated. I was a little girl, a literal little girl. Mm-hmm. And you killed my fucking mom. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, getting pissed off, I don't know why I was being so nice to you. I was super pissed when I got here for a reason.
Yeah.
And she's right on all counts.
And that's why I love what they did with this relationship, because you kind of touched on it earlier where there is, you know, in his own, I really actually believe, like, in his own fucked up way, Brenner actually cares for her
100%
and thinks he's protecting her. But then there is this also very real wrinkle to that relationship where I also think he is being selfish and thinking like, no, I want to, you know, keep doing this experiment and following where her powers lead. I think there's that little selfish part of him that is, that's what's really driving him, but there's still that element to that. He really does care. And it's,
well,
a very complicated relationship.
It's he's an abuser. He's toxic, right?
Yeah.
And I think that there's this element to actual abusers in this world where they manipulate themselves into thinking that, like, mm-hmm. I do care about this person. The best thing I can do for them is to keep them in the house, keep them from having any friends. Those friends are bad for them. They teach them bad things. This is, I know what's best, right? Like, so it's all very gross. But I thought it was, I don't know what the word is, but very, very wise or very, I was surprised that the Duffers went down that road, mm-hmm. and I was happy about it. Because it does add a lot of depth to that character and that relationship. And I would have been really disappointed if, like you said, they tried to gloss over everything that we know Brenner did. Actually, I was good. You know, that would have been very upsetting.
This whole season, I was torturing the bad children, like two and one.
I had someone shoot Benny in the face, but he was kind of an asshole.
Have you had his burgers? The world isn't missing much. I gave it a 2 on Yelp.
Yeah. He's definitely, by the way, Dr. Marty B, 100%.
Please call me Big Papa.
He takes the time to rate restaurants poorly on Yelp. He seems like the type. And then we cut back to the
waitstaff was very rude. My steak was medium when I clearly asked for medium rare. Will not return.
Children did not fight. Hate this place.
Every plaything goes in. When do the children start fighting? I also need a refill.
I thought this was medieval times.
Red Knight going down. I'm sorry. So we cut back to the Hawkins crew. Nancy and Max are sawing off a shotgun. And I love that. That whole, just that shot. That's all I need was Nancy sawing off a shotgun.
That gets us one step closer to what you've always wanted, which is Nancy with a head shaved, smoking a cigarette and a sawed off shotgun.
We're so much closer.
We're so much closer.
I need that in season 5 at the latest. And then they're doing all the prep. Eddie and Dustin are nailing nails into trash can lids for like stabby shields.
Yeah.
Which is going to work because the bats come up. You protect yourself with a shield, but not just any kind of shield. Annie, what kind of shield? A stabby shield.
Okay. I was like, there is a name for this, but I don't know what it's called.
What is the name for a stabby shield? It's a stabby shield, my friend. Mm-hmm. And so the bats are going to be killed whilst being warded off. I like the plan. Mm-hmm. I'm not so stoked about the knife spears. I mean, you got to have some spear training. Lucas does do some twirling. You might have had some experience with some spears. I don't know. I'm going to have to go with stabby shield and sawed off shotgun as the better weapons.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you work with what you're given, you know?
And then some. So they're big.
They went to an army surplus store and they came out with fucking sticks. They're going to tape some knives to the end of this.
One shotgun.
Robin's like, do they sell grenades here?
Yeah.
And then they start making Molotov cocktails instead.
Yeah.
Like,
well, they had to cut their shopping spree short because of Jason and the gang.
But also,
they're like, all right, who had does money? Anybody have any? I wanted to cancel the last two things I ordered.
It was just Robin and Steve using their family video money.
At first, I thought they were going to steal all that shit, and they were just walking around putting stuff in baskets.
Oh, that place was too popping to steal stuff.
No, 100%. I was like, this is not going to go well.
This is too hot.
The what do they call them? Hicks do not take kindly to you stealing their grenades.
We don't take kindly to those who steal our weapons.
Letter jackets? Get them.
Get them, boys.
Especially them women's.
These boys won state. All right. We're Hoosiers. All right. That's a big deal to us.
It is a huge deal. Sorry to Indiana listeners. It's hard to say. Indiana, it's 5:30. Did Steve say that?
It's 5:45 now, my friend.
I got to go to work in like an hour.
Yeah. It's going to be a long one. And then I love this scene, too, with Robin. So we get a scene with Robin and Steve. That's when Steve tries to cheer her up about Vicky. We hope her name's Vicky. But then Robin gives this speech like, hey, I don't think we're going to make it through it this time. Mm-hmm. And she's only been in one other season, so I don't know what the fuck she's talking about. But I guess we can assume she speaks for the whole crew.
She had a pretty wild experience her first time out.
She did. Yeah. And mad fools the lot of us, because Robin's literary, right? She's an educated gal. She's artistic. I like the way she talks. Something about it I love. And she says, mad fools the lot of us. And it's very Shakespearean. It's cool. Mm-hmm. I like it.
She's great.
Because after she says that, it cuts around. And then you got Eddie and Dustin with their stabby shields joking around. Lucas twirling the spear. And it's like, oh, they're so fucked. You know what I mean? And I just love that moment for sure.
You kind of glossed over the moment with Dustin and Eddie being friends. I thought that was really sweet.
That was a sweet moment.
Because it was cute.
It's setting it up for Eddie to replace Steve when he dies as Dustin's friend.
Oh, man. God damn it. I like that because it just shows Eddie's just a big fucking kid at heart.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Because he's just like, even in the wide shot, he's like goosing around and just being a nerd. And
I love when he like jumps over him, like leapfrogs him and starts stabbing his shield around. Like,
because what does Dustin say to him? Like, to get him to be all like, "You're awesome, Dustin." Isn't Dustin like, "To battle" or something like that?
That's Eddie that does the little, I don't know.
Ready to do battle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Battle, which is solid pun.
Very solid.
Especially given the circumstances. He's under a lot of pressure.
I love a good pun.
Then we cut back to 11 waking up. Wait. Yeah. I did gloss over him stabbing her in the neck with some, what's the word?
Some sleepy juice.
Yes, Andy. Oh my God, are you a nurse? How did you know that word?
Nurse, I need 10 cc's of sleepy juice. Stat.
Stat.
I'm going to stab this girl when she's not looking with my sleepy juice.
So then she wakes up. I did gloss over that. She wakes up in a collar. We've seen that collar before in the memories. Mm-hmm. He carries them. I've carried them ever since. Thank goodness I get a chance to use it.
I haven't used this since 2.
I love that he tracks time with the different numbered children.
I wrote in my notes, 11 got collared. She got collared by the law.
She definitely did, just as Dustin foreshadowed. And then Sullivan does actually arrive. There's a giant shootout. The second shootout of this whole series, I think. The second like real major shootout. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been Hopper shooting unaware Russians before. And then under...
I love the shootout. It's pretty funny because you got the Sullivan crew. They've got like riot shields and they've got like some really cool Roman tactics going on. You know, so they're the brave 300 with their shields. And then you got the people shooting guns. And then they would cut to the Dr. Brenner / Owens crew. And I think 2 or 3 of these guys aren't even looking where they're firing. They're just shooting. They're just closing their eyes like, "I'm hoping for the bad."
I'm so scared right now. Why is the bad government so much better trained?
Same team.
Anyway, I love this scene too. It's a lot of little unintentional comedy moments because Matthew Modine's really struggling holding up Billy Bobby Brown at a couple points because, you know.
Yeah, she's not a little kid anymore.
He's like, "Oh, goddamn."
When he carries her up the steps.
Papa's not as strong as it used to be.
Carries her up the steps out into the desert.
She's like dangling. Like,
Jesus fucking Christ.
Which I get. That would be tough.
This is a bad time to mention it, 11, but I think you've put on weight.
Could you use maybe a little bit of your psychic powers?
Maybe I shouldn't have given you so much sleepy juice.
Yeah. This inopportune time to have her half passed out. And then, but I love the soldiers. They're like looking for 11. One of them throws up the twin bed that's just already almost on the ground. And he's like, "Ah, I thought she was under there." What the fuck, dude? That's definitely not under there. We all knew that, right? But he had to check.
Yeah, you know, that's the hard way, right? He takes the bone off the hook.
True. This is the hard way. We're going to fuck up the whole bunker until you tell us where she is. My favorite part is when the soldier came running in and he says, "We found something you're going to want to see." Immediately, I thought of him. It's a fucking hot tub with TVs in it.
Well, goddamn. Lead the way, son.
Holy shit, man.
They got NFL on this.
Sit right in here, grab a couple brushes.
Oh, shit, there's Bud Lights, too.
Whose crib is this?
Marty B's crib, my boy.
Anyway, this is the climax of the episode. The doc runs out. He gets shot, drops 11, gets shot again. And what appears to be a terrible wound.
A terrible wound right on me. Oh, no.
It's way worse when it's on me.
This really hurts. Have I been doing this to others this whole time? I'm a monster.
It's really bad for Benny. And then...
No, he had shit burgers.
And soggy fries. And then the whole shit caboodle breaks apart. The sniper really tries to milk this shot of 11. Yeah. But understandably, that's the primary target. He has to get permission from up the chain. You can't just go shooting the primary target without authorization. you know, back then CB radios took a couple of seconds to get through with the signal. Plus they're in a bunker. So by the time it gets back to him, he's like, check this out. About to. I love his portrayal of these men, these military men. Like there's no hesitation whatsoever. It's just like, check this out, Bill. About to shoot a little girl. They're like, yeah, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. High five.
About to use the bullets. We got a war zone. But I love the like little horror moment where Eleven's the monster, though, because he sees the civvies, right, which is the California crew driving in the pizza van, that distracts him. And when the through the angle of the scope, when it cuts back, Eleven's not there anymore, which was comical at first because I was like, is she actually hiding behind a tree or something? Because there's the desert. But then she's standing and it's, you know what I mean? It's like a,
yeah,
like you'd normally see that in a the protagonist point of view to the monster. Mm-hmm. Right. I just thought that was neat. She's the monster. Nice. Because she just said she wasn't the monster, but like visually now she is.
I'm going to subvert up expectations.
Neat. And then, yeah, Papa's there bleeding out. She uses her powers to crash the helicopter into all the other Humvees so they can't give chase, which I thought was lucky.
There's a shot. Oh, it blew my mind. I thought this is such a well-composed shot where it's her hand is in the foreground and the way it's framed, the helicopter spinning is like positioned above her hand rotating. So it looks like her hand literally has a tiny little helicopter that she's manipulating. Yeah. Such a well-composed shot. Loved it so much.
I love this whole sequence, like visually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was awesome, especially when the helicopter explodes and she's right in the center of it. It makes it look like she's right in front of it and then cuts kind of off to the side a little bit and you can see the actual distance there. But I just thought it was breathtaking. Really, really well done. Really powerful.
Absolutely.
Plus, this is the big return, right? The third time we've seen her use her powers this season, but really the big return of Eleven that we know and love.
This is the money shot. This is in the trailer, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we get to say goodbye to Papa after this. And I'm going to spoil it, guys. No, I can't spoil it. I can't spoil my puddings. This moment might be or might not be in my puddings.
Mm. Time will tell.
This is a Netflix style trailer for the chocolate pudding section right now.
What Noah Schnapp just tweeted a photo of him crying. You will not believe what's in Chris's chocolate puddings.
With a little helicopter emoji.
Well, I'll talk about it more in my pudding. If you guys want to talk about it now, you can. But Papa dies. Huge moment. But then Mike runs up. And I was just like, God damn it. Talks to Eleven real quick, hugs her. And then she looks at Will and she gets really excited to see Will. And I needed that in my heart. Mm-hmm. If Will just stood there off to the side, I was going to throw Andy's remote at Andy's TV and storm out and slam Andy's door.
I mean, there was more evidence of the fact that Will loves Mike because when Mike and Eleven embrace, they definitely frame Will in the center of them, like in between them. So that's definitely something they're visually cueing us towards now. But yeah, when she looked at Will and actually treated Will as if he's a brother to her.
Yes. Because
he functionally is. It was just like, yes, yes, thank you. That's what we've, I think, all been wanting from that relationship this whole season. It's like, just recognize Will, please.
Well, it was kind of funny. Like internally, I was kind of measuring my own emotions. And so when Mike ran up to her, I was kind of like, eh, right? But then when she looks at Will and she runs and embraces Will, I actually got a little teary. You know what I mean? Like, oh, family, they're home. Mm-hmm. And that's just how I feel. I can't change how I feel. There's no real rhyme or reason for it. It's just how I feel. But that's the end of this episode, pretty much. We cut back to the gang a little bit, jamming to some Journey. Prepping up, dropping off at Henry Creel's house. That's Lucas and Erica and Max all walk into the Henry Creel house. Presumably, the Sinclairs are there to save Max if need be. And the rest of the crew head to, I presume, a gate to enter the Upside Down.
You missed a really funny line in the Will reunion when Eleven's like, we have to go save them. They're going to die.
Oh, God.
And Will's like, who's going to die?
Yeah.
The only people we know in Hawkins. Yeah,
that actually upset me that they give Noah Schnapp that line. Mike, I would have believed it. But Eleven's trying to tell him.
Even Argyle would have been like, oh, okay, Argyle doesn't know.
Yeah, he doesn't know who those people are. Yeah, exactly.
Is Nina okay?
But Will?
You mean like your friends and family, man?
You mean like your friends and family, man?
Wait, you're from Indiana?
Wait. Do you even have weed there, man?
What?
So then, yeah, that's the end of the episode. Let's move on to our, what do we do, Eggos first? It's been a little minute, guys. No, we do puddings first. Pudding, baby. Pudding. Andy, what's your number three favorite moment
in this episode? My number three favorite moment was Nancy describing Vecna's victims and the sequence of everybody figuring out the whole four things, four chimes, four gates, whatever. But most importantly, Elle eavesdropping on the conversation, the design of the in-between with the phone and stuff. And I thought that Nancy absolutely was crushing it in that sequence. And it just, it was basically like a little trailer within the show of what's coming in the next episode or next season. And it was just like, here's all the shit to get really hyped for you guys. And it's like, there's going to be armies.
It's going to be really cool.
Over Hawkins. And yeah, I'm excited for it.
100%. Awesome moment. Awesome moment. Steve, your number three favorite moment.
And Max saying, like, I'm going to let myself be the target and try not to miss. That try not to miss line was dope.
Yeah.
My number three is a very small moment, but it's one that elicited the only heart that I drew in my notes. And that was the moment between Robin and Steve.
Oh,
yeah. Robin and Steve getting ready and they're just talking to one another. Steve's still trying to be the great wingman and kind of keep Robin's spirits up. And
yeah.
Then Robin,
the mirth, if you will.
The mirth. You know, there's a lot of mirth to go around and Steve recognizes that. He's just trying to let his bro Robin know. Rockin' Robin. She needs to know about all this mirth.
Smurfs.
All the Smurfs.
All the Smurfs.
All the Smurfs. God damn. It is 6 in the morning.
The sun is rising.
God damn. It was just a quiet moment between these characters. There's a lot of foreboding in it, but it's like, I think Steve and Robin may be my favorite on-screen friendship ever, like in any movie and television show. Like, I just love their friendship so much. And God, I don't want to cry next episode, but I feel like I'm going to.
Yes, 100%. We're going to cry. My number three favorite moment is Hopper and Joyce getting to talk for a second before it becomes absurd because they're in a really serious, time-sensitive situation. But we had to give them that. And like Andy said, if there was a moment there, I think it was Andy that said, it almost just looks for the first time like Hopper the character in that moment. And that was awesome to see because I love me some Hopper so very, very much. Andy, what is your number two favorite moment?
My number two favorite moment is Elle bringing down the chopper. It was just like the audio design of it. The shots that Steve was describing, not just like looking like she has the toy helicopter in her hand was amazing, but like the wides of it, like just in the emotional power of it, her like destroying the people that are trying to hurt her family and her friends and Paul Reiser, like fuck those people.
Yeah,
and
for
she,
sure.
She fucks them up and it was dope.
Definitely don't hurt Paul Reiser.
No.
I'll bring a whole diner down upon your heads. Steve, what is your number two?
My number two is when Marty B turns bad. Specifically the scene when he locks Eleven in the Nina container and they have that back and forth with one another where Eleven says, like, you know, you sent me to find Henry. You were always the monster. I thought I was a monster, but no, you were the one. You killed my mom, damn it. But no, I really love that scene. It was something where I was doing a lot of mental, like, what do you call this move? Like, yeah,
fist pump.
I was doing mental fist bumps.
What do you call this move?
Watch me, guys. I was doing mental fist bumps because in my head, I'm like, yes, she's not forgiving him. She's giving him the business. He's evil. He's a bad, like, we love Dr. Brenner. He's a great character. We make fun of him a lot, but he's a bad dude. And the season has been so much about rehabbing his character, which was a fun kind of journey to be on, but I was so happy they kind of stuck true to what this character is. Like, he's done fucked up shit. Please, you know, acknowledge that and make that, don't let people gloss that over. Yeah,
absolutely. My number two is the moment with Steve and Robin. So I didn't fall shoot off or include that on there. I absolutely loved it. Like, I love me some Robin so much. It's skyrocketed to the top of my list next to Max and Steve. So I cheat. But friends don't lie. Yeah. I love that little moment that they have. And I talked about it earlier. They're just her way of speaking and the way she enunciates and the words she chooses to use. I'm in love with all of it. Andy, your number one favorite moment of this episode?
The one that was Steve's number two, the whole confrontation with Dr. Brenner, him, his turn. Like,
yeah,
it's even though he's a bad dude, it still surprised me.
which was awesome. And like the whole, I'm not the monster, you're the monster. I got chills at the you're the monster moment. And
yeah.
I thought that like Millie, I give her a hard time for her acting in general. Like she crushed it in Stranger Things, but outside of that, for me, less so. But this, I was like, holy fuck. Yeah, let's go.
I've never seen her anything else because I didn't watch Enola Holmes.
Yeah. Oh, that and Godzilla is pretty much all we have to go off of.
True.
Let's not hold it Millie Bobby Brown account for Godzilla.
Yeah. But anyway, like she absolutely crushed the performance here. And like even Dr. Brenner, like he starts to cry during that sequence and that like speaks to like how twisted he is emotionally. And like it is actually hurting him that in some fucked up, weird, dark way, he does care about her and is hurt by the words that she's saying. And just like the emotional nuance was incredible in this sequence.
Really important for her character. So that was an awesome moment. Steve, what was your favorite moment of this episode?
My favorite moment, number one, is Dr. B biting the dust and dying.
Literally.
He's really dusty out there. Hour.
Yeah.
We did kind of joke how he would like lay on the ground and then he would turn like, where are they going now?
This wound is quite terrible.
They're going to get help, right?
What's happening?
What's happening over to my left? Oh, nothing's over there. I'm fine. But no, I love this scene because he has this moment where he's like, Eleven, I need you to understand that everything I did was for you. Please tell me you understand. And she doesn't give him the satisfaction. She lets it hang in the air. She lets go of his hand. She doesn't forgive him. And I think,
goodbye, Papa.
I think that is such a powerful thing to do because in so many other shows would be like, hey, you know what? You're bad. I'll forgive you because you're dying. Yeah. But she doesn't. And I thought that was such a, I don't know if it's a brave, but it's definitely a powerful choice to do that in medium. Mm-hmm. And so when she said goodbye, Papa, and got up and just left him to die, I was just kind of like, oh, that's ice cold, but he deserves it. He deserves it. It just made this relationship between those two characters so much more fascinating and interesting to watch. It was such a perfect way to kind of put a period on that part of the story.
Absolutely, that's my number one favorite moment as well. That's why I didn't talk about it earlier. I just everything that you just said. You know, I thought it was such a twist because I fully expected her to say I understand in some kind of like final way. Like I do understand you as a person and I'm going to heal from it. And I would have even been okay with that. But the fact that I put 11 cold, cause I originally had written Chopper as my number one, right? Cause just the whole cinematography of that sequence was incredible. And then I put that in parentheses and put 11 cold. Cause like, okay, that outdoes it because I did not expect her to just say goodbye, Papa. And just for no other reason than I'm not letting you die, with any less pain. You know, you don't deserve from me. You've put so much of your bullshit onto me my entire life that I'm not going to take more of it just so you can rest a little easier. No, your life sucked. You accomplished nothing. I award you no points. Peace out. And then she puts on her little glasses. Da 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 da. Yeah, I love that for her character.
It's a Dio double ones.
Doll. So I thought that was awesome that she left him that way, which brings us finally so we can go to work and die. Our egos, our little egos that we found. I already brought up Madonna, Bowie, Blondie. I
already did the Iron Maiden tape cassette.
Uh-huh. Steve, you got any egos?
I have a bunch, but a lot of them are pretty obvious. Joyce mentioned Starsky and Hutch, popular TV show. The Demogorgons in the vats scene, I don't know if this is what they were going for, but it definitely reminded me of the scene from Alien Resurrection.
I thought it was Alien, but I didn't know which one.
It's Resurrection when they see all the clones of Ripley in the vats, and some of them don't look as good as others. Right. let me see.
Mike compares himself to Lois Lane.
Yeah, there's a Superman reference. Is Warzone a Rambo reference?
Well, that was a Rambo picture. There was a picture of Rambo. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if Warzone is specifically Rambo.
Well, yeah, it's just warish is the whole, you know, franchise of Rambo.
The Winnebago in and of itself just reminded me of Spaceballs. Because the Lone Star pilots a Winnebago with wings.
Yeah.
And the W of the Winnebago, I know this is not the Easter egg, but it, oh, every time you see the W from the Winnebago, I mean, I just think Westworld.
Yeah, it looks just like the Westworld W for sure. I don't know if the three girls, three boys, six children thing was a Brady Bunch. It was super dumb, but I just wrote that down for something.
What? I don't even know what
When Steve said he would like to have three girls and three boys as six children to go across the country with.
Here's a story.
Is Steve's jacket, Steve's jacket that he gets in Warzone really felt like an Eggo? And I'm going to go with Top Gun, but I don't know.
I'd have to look at it again. It might be like, just because I know
it's just like a leather pilot-y jacket with patches.
I know eventually Robin gets a beret and the three of them together, I think. That kind of reminds me of a Red Dawn. So that might be a Red Dawn reference, but I'd have to look at Steve's jacket again because I can't.
I think it's a jean jacket. I think.
Well, he had the jean vest beforehand. Did he get a jean jacket in the store?
I think it's a brown leather jacket is what I'm. If I had,
saw the patches.
If I had $10.
Nothing that I recognize.
Yeah. It's something for sure. I got one last one, and this is a deep, I made it up.
You made it up?
When the chopper crashed, just because it's like, okay, every splode-splode looks like other splode-splodes, but I really think it was an intentional Terminator 2 splode-splode. When the chopper crashes into the Humvees, there's a point at which the shot is framed just like John Connor and the Terminator in the middle of the fire, just like that. Looked intentional to me. Looked like a James Cameron shot.
Nice.
To me.
To him.
Mm-hmm. Who am I? I'm just a fucking guy on a podcast.
The last egos I have are just the songs I picked up on that played. We had Coming Around the Bend by CCR, Creedence Clearwater Revival. Fire and Rain by James Taylor was playing. Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo by Rick Derringer. And Worlds Apart, Separate Ways, Journey.
Was there any Cyndi Lauper in there?
I did not hear any Cyndi.
Damn.
Dude, that Journey execution at the end of the episode was really well done.
Yeah, that's the
because they changed the whole vibe of that song. Mm-hmm.
That's the one they used in the trailer.
Yeah.
From like a couple months ago. And that's a great remix of that song.
It was really cool. I like that a lot. So we're so excited for the finale. We got to go to our day jobs now. Thank you for tuning in. Before we leave you, one last thing. We got to read you the Mad Lib that we created.
All right, boys. This week's episode, Ellipses by Nancy Wheeler. Mm. Are you ready to find out what you did?
So ready.
Here we go. When the Post received a telepeanut butter call from a local Mrs. Tart complaining about rabid anteaters in her home, I knew it was worth investigating. I arrived at her bungalow with Hawkins Post photographer Simon Pegg. We were then led down a flight of stairs to a rather crunchy basement. There sat the evidence, 14 bags of ropes ripped and gnawed. But that wasn't all. One of the anteaters in question was caught and caged. Upon further investigation, local fluffers reported similar cases of missing trees. Such as caressing supplies, diesel fuel, and fertilizer. Quite the peculiar puzzle. A few days later, I checked in on Mrs. Tart.
It works.
It was a cruel night, dark and stormy. Yet when I knocked on the disco ball, no one answered. Worried for her safety, I entered her home. Shrieks and beards led me down to the basement.
Follow the beards.
And what I found there was the most sumptuous sight. Unlike anything most nails in this world have ever seen.
That's true.
And that concludes by Nancy Wheeler.
I like how you left. You glossed over that the fluffers had missing caressing supplies.
I couldn't read that sentence.
That was really well done. Most of it actually made sense. Pretty proud of this week's Mad Lib. That's all the time we have for right now. Good luck with the finale. I hope you don't cry too much. We'll see you right after because we're your best friends. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this was Streaming Things. Happy streaming.
It's time to thank the patrons. You dropping me a beat? All right, here we go. We're going to do this quick and dirty because Andy has to get ready to go to work. We reorganize everybody, so just bear with this one. This is brand new. We would like to thank for supporting the show on Patreon. A. Wells, double A, Aaron A, single A, Aaron A, Aaron B, Aaron K, Aaron L, Adam C, Adam R, Amanda.
I can't do the beat because Andy's doing a didgeridoo.
Keep going. I'm doing the bass line to the beat.
Amelia, thank you so much. Andrew, thank you. Andy, Angela, Ariana, Ashley, thank you. Brenda, thank you. Cake,
thank you. Cake,
thank you. Carlo, thank you. Carmelita, thank you. Casey, Katarina, Cody, Cryptoholic, thank you. Danielle, E. Lopez, Emily, Enza, Erica, Gavin, Glenn, Hannah, Jacqueline, Jacob, Jade, Jared, Jeanette, Jenna, Jessica, Jimmy, Joel A, Joel D, John, Jordan, thank you so much. Thank you. Katharina, Katie, Carrie, Kevin, Kimberly, Kyle, Lady Pris, Lisa, Marcus, Michelle, Mike, Mindy, Monique, Nick, Orion, thank you. Phil, Reese, the Reed family, Rockin' Robin, Sandra, Sarah, Shay, Stephen V, Thomas, and last but not least, thank you, Tyler.
Yay! I like the alphabetical version. It's got like a really good ring, you know? It's got the L.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.